This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigwe, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am located in Manakwisk in St. John, New Brunswick, which is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Wolastoqiyik Maliseet people. Hey everybody, after some holiday chicanery and after not a small amount of technical malfeasance, we're back and we're the AdNonTech Podcast as ever. Dr. Doug Reed over there and myself, Dr. Matt Stranick, hope the holiday has been kind to you and those around you so far. How's your thing here been, Doug, your Festivus period time?
It has been fantastic, except I am exhausted. You know when you have people around all the time and you're always doing stuff? That's like the opposite of the sleeping in and being a sloth. But it's been amazing. It's been so good. I've been so happy with it. How about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, yeah. It's been a really solid holiday. It's been just because of the factors at play in my personal and professional thing right now. Apart from the fact that it's absent my kids, which is, you know, huge. It's actually, besides that, it's the least stressful holiday I can remember like in years, actually. Just completely low key, checked in with all the people in person and I don't know. I feel like it was completely successful relative to what it was going to be. So.
Right on. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So this episode, in my opinion, was actually done to a really high standard more than a week ago. It's like got up in the morning, you know, had the energy for it. We had a really great conversation. Nobody doing any weird verbal tics too much that got noticed. But then StreamYard utterly shat the bed when it came to producing an audio recording on my end. And whether that's just the omnipresent sketchy internet factor, which is now coupled with the fact that I reside in a basement, which may, you know, even extenuate that further. But nevertheless, we are taking another run at it because that's what we do. We're both really that committed to the enterprise and probably should be committed. Hardy har har. What you got cooking here, Doug? I mean, what's your thing? What's your opening gambit ahead of this topic? What would you like to say here, pal?
Well, I just want to thank Charles Dickens because we are one of a long line of people that have just ripped off his ideas. And so we're going to take a look at our third chapter of The Ghosts of Christmas. So we're the ghosts of EdTech yet to come. And I read an interesting article about Charles Dickens and how this story revived Christmas. Christmas was one of those holidays that was kind of fading off and not being that big a deal. And then he brought it back. And now people love it more than ever. I don't know whether that's true, but kind of makes me feel good if it is.
Well, and first of all, as a English teacher, former English teacher, English major at university, my mom friggin' almost did a master's degree in English almost before choosing to go into being a lawyer. for her career. And so, I mean, to me, this just hits all the buttons. So when I'm going through your notes here, as per the Dickens, the title of it is actually The Ghosts of EdTech Future, that is to say, Yet to Come, because that's more in keeping with the original, isn't it, Doug?
I think it is. Well, so that's what we're doing today.
Dope. So why don't you tell us about, why don't you give us the runoff here into the first source, pal?
Okay. So what I've done this week is I've gone in and grabbed a whole bunch of current articles that where people are trying to forecast the future. And you know how good EdTech is at that, because nobody thought social media was going to be a thing. So sometimes we have some blind spots. But the Akhmenov 2022 article, Use of ICT in Higher Ed, is really interesting, because one thing that they say is any changes, any digital economy changes in higher ed has to be implemented comprehensively, systemically, and in an orderly manner. And does that really happen? Have you ever been a part of that in a post-secondary where those things, when it got down to the nuts and bolts of it, that it was done and those with those three things as a priority, comprehension, systemically, and orderly?
Well, I remember, I'm just going back in my mind to what we talked about before. First of all, kudos, Doug, as ever, with this enterprise where you're bringing in sources from outside the North American academic industry. That's really, the International Journal. I think I kind of asked you to pronounce the title of the journal last time, and we're not going to go there, I don't think. That wasn't necessarily nice.
Thank you.
To do that, but yeah, thank yeah. You. But it was meant in good, jolly good holiday fun, Governor. but otherwise, right? I don't know. I think it's one of those things where we talked about, like, to summarize, I suppose, a tangent from the previous recording, is that, planning processes, it's like design. Good design is invisible. Good planning is invisible. But man, when it's absent, like anybody who's ever witnessed a engineering failure has witnessed a failure that could have been prevented in the planning stages. And I'm not saying the learning technology department at a certain university that shall remain nameless is like an engineering failure in motion. But I mean, if I did say that, it might be somewhat true according to a certain perspective. And that's great, because you know why? Opinions are like, elbows. I was going to say most people have one, right? So that's just me having an opinion about that. So thanks for the opportunity to reflect there, Doug. I appreciate it.
No problem. Have you ever, here's another one then. Part of my experience and why I picked this particular article was at a previous institution, not the one we worked at together, they created like the super teaching classroom, and they dumped like $1 million worth of tech into the classroom, but then didn't talk to any educators, or the educators they talked to were just those yes people. It just said yes to whoever. And so they made it functionally useless. They should have just took $1 million and put it in a waste paper bin and lit it on fire. Like that was the value of the $1 million they spent on this one classroom. They made it so you couldn't possibly use it in a pedagogical way. So in your experience, because I know you've been at a couple of places, have you ever had those kind of like the hardware implementations, or was it just software?
I guess what I would say is, I'm being obviously very tongue in cheek and very facetious about, a past employment yes. experience. I mean, it's just what I think what happens is you get people with varying levels of knowledge and, shall we say competence. When it comes to certain aspects of their roles. So you may have somebody who's like really great on, outreach or programming, but then maybe, has less, experience or whatnot in, say, budgetary or procurement processes. And that is legit. That is what good institutional PD should there be to A, predict throughout the hiring process, B, click into place with a, you know, sort of develop training plan or whatever, you know, a professional enhancement plan out of the gate that's actually structured. And then so you sort of address the gaps and then, you know, in a sort of orderly way, and then you have a platform to sort of your higher deliverables. And I think the worst thing is that you just kind of throw people into a boardroom or a meeting room or a Zoom conference and just go, oh, okay, well, this budgetary procurement thing needs to happen. And, you know, whoever's in this room is going to roll up their sleeves and do it. And it just, you know, it's just like tech is such a resource hungry area. It's just so great for, you know, sloshing over surplus or predicted, you know, financial, you know, accounting practices. It's just like, it's just, and there are so many stakeholders who have a say. And sometimes it's almost like there's too much consulting to the point where you're paying consultants as well as having to balance that with satisfying everybody, you know, to get to the point where it checks off all the boxes, like you sort of described with that, you know, example, and it satisfies absolutely no one whatsoever. So again, having, I guess, just robust, rigorous, accepted, you know, just common, you know, project or business management practices across an organization is just something that, you know, higher ed doesn't seem to do particularly well, you know, generally, in some instances more than others. And there's definitely exceptions to that. But observationally and anecdotally, man, I mean, I don't know. Sorry, this is definitely a tangent. Anything there that kind of speaks to you, bud?
No. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were. And I think we've been at different institutions, but we've seen the same thing. We've experienced that same. I've been the person in that meeting where it's like, whoa, we're making what decision today? Are you kidding me? These are the wrong people in the room. Why are we doing this?
We have to do what within 3 months? You know, like, oh, okay. Well, who decided that? Well, that's when fiscal year ends. Oh, well, we got some budget we got to burn. Oh, well, who else needs to burn some budget? Oh, well, why don't we just stack it all up there and then see if we can't get the newest whiz-bam thing that, you know, this friggin' consultant sent us an email about. Without testing it, without vetting it properly, it's just, okay. I mean, not that I'm an expert or spent any time in institutional procurement processes. I don't mean to like beat that level of it like a pinata. Our colleagues in those areas fill very serious and necessary functions. It just seems like so much stuff is done by committee with people with A, no particular educational background or interest, B, with people who may even not have any particular business or project management experience, both of which are most assuredly needed to set up a climate under which expenditures can be timely, well-balanced, you know, and appropriate, you know, to actual things rather than just being some goofball, you know, half-assed gimmick, which just ends up sucking a lot of budget and not, you know, working in any way that it was meant to.
And speaking of things that don't work any way that they're meant to, I want to jump to the Fauci 2022 article, e-learning in higher ed institutions with a bibliometric analysis.
Bibliometric analysis. So rad. So rad.
It is. It is. Yeah. Now there's two things I want to talk about in this article. One is the whole concept of making sure not to burden students and faculty members with troublesome and unnecessary workload. Or like that is vital. That should be at the base of every decision. And I want to talk about the chart that the listeners can go to the website and take a look at, because that is a scatter plot. Is that what it's called? I keep forgetting.
We had a really whimsical thing about this last time. I am remembering now. I'm just going to say if you are into Jackson Pollock, you might appreciate a scatter plot with the colors. It's just like taking a paintbrush and just boosh, you know, the but it's actually data presented in a complex data presented in a really neat way, which because of, you know, the size of a computer screen, a size of a JPEG graphic squeezed onto a computer screen, I have no way of understanding what that means. I just like, as a artistic kind of thing made of data tendrils, I just think it kind of looks cool. But then to speak to the point, I think that we came to last time around with that was there's some serious sensory deficiencies there for people who have, you know, non-standard sensory configuration, right?
So I don't see greens as well as everybody else. So that chart is kind of useless because they present some information just through color. So yeah. I just can't, I'm guessing at what they're trying to get at and how they're grouping things. So it is a very nice chart. Like if you were trying to present that to somebody to say, look at all the work we did without getting them to read 8, 10, 20 pages, they could look at that and say, oh yeah, you've obviously read a lot. You've obviously blah, blah, blah.
You know, your due diligence. If you could have some click in, like it looks to me like if you had, that would be like a cool H5P interaction where you have the, you know, the you know, hotspot activity where you click in and it zooms in onto a node of a more complex thing. And then it has sort of a further enhancement or, you know, a little blowout or a little video embed or something, which sort of speaks to that particular node. But in terms of like just a meaningful graphic, it's effectively useless. I mean, it really, it's not to put too fine a point on it, but it's article though, isn't it, Doug?
If you're looking at relationships, yeah, it's fine. Like back in the day when we had Java that worked on computers and stuff, right? You would like double click on the mind mapping software, and then whatever that node is, you could double click on that and zoom it and move that around and do very interactive things with it. The problem is we get that from a journal article, so all that functionality is gone if it was ever there. So I know some people like to present data like that, and I like to talk about it. Anyway, go ahead, please.
No, but really, so, I mean, again, I just, and this is like, you know, something that probably could be cool. I mean, so this is, so balance between ensuring well-balanced education in the time of COVID-19, while at the same time not burdening students and faculty members with troublesome and unnecessary workload. And I mean, again, I think that's just something where that's, you know, a sentiment we can all get to. And again, I think that's, I do like when I look at some of the names on the graphic, you know, like there's a UNESCO there I'm seeing, some references. So if you sort of look at this as almost like, well, you know, almost like a de facto reference list, it's, you know, and then you associate it with the title of the article, you kind of, I guess it does invite some meaningful analysis on a personal level, but at just first glance, it's just like, man, Jackson Pollock. So what else have we got here, man? What do we got for the next one?
Well, just to come back this last one last time, I really liked the rest of the article. And the key point of them getting to caring about faculty members and students as if they were actually people. And if you treat people well, they do better. Like that was the basis of what they found. So that was really nice. It was a nice, kind message. And I like nice, kind messages.
We aim for that. It's not just sarcasm and snide remarks. We do have compassion in our own educationalish kind of way on this thing, I like to think. So good point on you, Doug, there. And that does actually, that's actually a pretty good segue into the next one, which is something that I appreciate. Canadian sources on this one, too. BC sources, where we both spent some time, as far as it goes. So with that in wind up, what are we talking about there, Doug?
So the DeRosa and Jahangi 2023 Open Pedagogy article, they talk about open pedagogy with dynamic commitments. And it's sometimes it's just too simple to say, okay, you have to produce X, Y, and Z. It's like, why? What is the point of that? Everybody has their own needs for their growth and the journey that they're taking. Why can't things be more dynamic? If some people are really strong in that area, why not let them flourish and head off in that direction? Why does everybody have to follow the same path? So when they talk about like a sustainable, vibrant, inclusive future, that's where the open pedagogy come from. And I really hope this picks up speed, because I know it's out there, but it hasn't really hit the mainstream yet, except through the buzzwords, right? Like it, people will use it in articles, or it'll be a clickbait kind of article. But I'm hoping we can really get to the learner-centered vision for higher ed and get away from those other conversations that aren't learner-centered. I realize institutions have other priorities. I get it. But the number one reason that we even exist is to help the students and is to help the learner get to where the learner needs to get, wherever that happens to be. So giving them agency, giving them access, and giving them a good commons-oriented approach will help us step in the right direction. That's something we've learned in the last 150 years. It's let's help people get there the way we get there. Sorry, I was on a soapbox for a little bit there, but I really enjoyed DeRosa et al. When they talked
about the open pedagogy. No, that's so rad. And I mean, honestly, just as you were speaking to that, again, really thoughtful commentary there, bud. I'm just looking up because I know Rajiv, you know, had been working at Quantum Polytechnic for quite some time, and I knew he had recently shifted over to another institution in Ontario, and I just looked up his Faculty of Education page at Brock University, where he's Associate Professor, Vice Provost Teaching and Learning as well. So, you know, he's just been contributing to the field in lots of meaningful ways, and he's bringing the open, you know, pedagogy and concepts that he sort of had the chance to work on and develop along with his, you know, many other colleagues, far too many to mention meaningfully here. And again, for me, it sort of speaks to this sort of, I don't know, mutual appreciation society between Ontario and BC ed tech sectors generally, with the BC campus over on the West Coast and eCampus Ontario in Eastern Canada, and they, you know, exchanging people who work in key positions of those organizations, like upper leadership, and also, you know, obviously keeping notes. And a lot of what I find that I want to put in my section of the show notes, a fair amount of it, just these emails to myself or whatever, is like, you know, a really cool H5P interaction or whatnot from one of those repositories, among others, because this stuff is increasingly of interest to me. Even though I'm not in the higher ed sector as such anymore, I still see that kind of take this and use it as a model or adapt it, or, you know, even possibly use it as is, some of it. So, you know, and this is where the Creative Commons licensing framework can become helpful. And again, I think that that's all bundled into the open education sort of paradigm or whatnot. And again, we have our two authors here, Rajiv and, you know, DeRosa, Robin. I think their first name's Robin, R. They've just been doing a lot over the years in this area, and kudos for keeping it real in 2023. So that's me going.
And I'm going to pat myself on the back because I didn't know that they were Canadian, but I'm happy to learn that they're here.
Yeah. I it's leading the foray, as it were, or certain aspects of the foray. So, anywho, and now you got a rather longer passage here, sort of that you've extrapolated from Guppy et al. We're going to say that one. Guppy et al. You want to share us through that one a little bit there, bud?
Sure. This is from BJet, and BJet articles are always longer, I find. And it's all about the future of digital learning. And part of the future of digital learning is I want to keep banging the drum to say the pandemic pivot was not online learning. That was a panic move that people desperately took. It is not what online learning is. And most of the respondents, when we look at the big themes across our whole sector, is that nothing revolutionary is coming. Nobody believes there's going to be a big shift of anything in the next few years.
AI?
We have all kinds of technologies now. That's already here.
Yeah. Oh, so
we're adapting to it.
Okay. I got you. Like further downstream, further down the horizon. I got you. Okay.
Yeah. So we have the AI stuff. We have the online stuff. We have open pedagogy. We have learner center. We have all these things, and our educators have experience now. So it's them taking their experience and tying it to the technology and tying it to the pedagogy to come out with the trends that we're going to head to in the future. So I don't see anything big. Like, it's not like aliens are going to come down, or it's not like the lost city of Atlantis is going to pop up and change the world.
I'm putting up my warning hand. You invited the possibility of speaking to aliens on the show, and we've come so far from a failed technical aspect to get this episode to where it is. So we do have to come back and have an alien themed episode, just because I actually have some opinions about this, and I suspect, Gung, you might as well. So
just maybe.
Okay. So sorry, I'm not even. Please continue, Dr. Nope. Reed.
While there's no big changes on the horizon, we are going to be adapting to what's already happened. We're going to spend a bunch of time getting used to that. And for example, more students and more educators understand blended hybrid courses now. So those are going to continue, and they'll probably end up being more of them because there's so many positive reasons why you could. And
it's true.
Same with online courses, right? There are some courses that are just fine online. Like if I'm taking a Psych 101 course and the prof stands at the front and just reads from the book, I could do that from home. I don't need to be in the room while the prof reads to me. When I was an undergrad, I took that first year psych course, and that's what it was. The fellow up there read page by page by page for the hour every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Yeah. And it's like, why am I here?
One thing that I enjoyed when I was taking a couple of classes of Irish literature in my final years of my undergrad was Stuart Donovan from St. Thomas University. I think he's still active, actually. Instead of him reading the thing, he actually, you know, one lecture per week or whatever, spent most of the class having us read from, you know, Ulysses or whatever, and then using that after we'd actually, you know, read 5 minutes of it, you know, a few paragraphs or whatever, and then you have a discussion around what you literally just talked about and heard, you know. So it's like it's just funny how undynamic the lecture typically is, because as a format it can really be done well by the people who know how to do it well. So that's all.
Yeah. The last thing that Guppy et al. Mentioned that I really liked was they talked to faculty, students, senior admin, and instructional design professionals, and there was a strong congruency in all their beliefs. Everybody is thinking, yeah, this is what's going to happen in the near future. which was really nice. There was nobody saying, are you kidding me? This has got to change, or you're not paying attention to that, and that's going to hit us like a freight train. So it was really, really nice to see, okay, we're all kind of on board. We all have a kind of a feel for what's coming. Because another thing that really interested me is I was talking to some people in industry, and it, not the education industry, like a trade.
Yep.
And one of the ways that this trade across the province is getting more workers is to say, we're giving you a choice. Do you want to work 5 8-hour days or 4 10-hour days? Because your week will be 40 hours, but which way do you want to split it up? And almost everybody is taking the 4 10s. Everybody wants that extra day off. And so then business can go in and say, okay, here's how we're setting up our workloads and how things are going to get done and all the scheduling. And it was just neat to see a trade say, this is where we're headed. This is what the industry wants. This is what the workers want. Everybody likes it. Can we convince the post-secondaries to head in that direction? Other than K-12 being a babysitting service, why are the students going 5 days a week? Why couldn't they go 4 days a week? Because we had that same conversation in the 80s when they started to have year-round schooling in Canada. Oh, no, we couldn't do that because, well, the year-round schools are still year-round schools. It's 35, 40 years later, and it's still working. So those arguments get a little thin. Anyway, you mentioned AI, so I want to go to AI. And we have a LIM article, LIM et al., Generative AI and the Future of Education, Ragnarok or Reformation. And one of the reasons I picked this is not because it was AI, but because it had Ragnarok in the title.
Yes.
I just love the concept of Ragnarok.
Can you extrapolate on that concept a bit, Al?
Sure. In Norse mythology or Norse beliefs, Ragnarok is when basically the world of the gods comes to an end. And so all the gods get killed and the world ends, and that's the way it is. And that's when the Midgard serpent that's hidden in the ocean and is just down there wrapped around the earth a couple of times comes up and kills Thor and wipes everything out along with Loki and it's his other minions. But there's one of the two ways that things change. And that's why it was Ragnarok or Reformation. Because Reformation is things change a little bit at a time, right? Well, we'll just modify this. Okay, we'll just modify that. And okay, we'll just modify. We'll chip away at this, chip away at that. And Ragnarok is burn it down and redo it. Or tear that old house down and rebuild the house. As a person that has bought an old house and gutted it back to studs and then rebuilt it from the inside, I know how much work that is. It would be easier to tear it down and just build new. But if you want to keep parts of the old, or if you want to do it slightly cheaper, then there's other ways to go around it. So there's the two different schools of how to get there. And this LIM article really talks about how AI is going to impact us. And I'm just wondering, before I even get into these four paradoxes that they present, you use AI a lot more than me. I think that's a fair comment.
I just sort of see it as,
I'm looking at your background.
Yeah. So I guess, first of all, thanks for the insightful guidance through these sources so far, not just actually, you know, just kind of picking them up off the given a good amount of thought to them as well. I mean, that's very helpful for slackers like me who may not necessarily track down the whole source. So it's always great when there's like a somewhat annotated bibliography kind of vibe happening. And I think that's a really cool aspect of what this show produces. And boy, do I have some ridiculous outlandish concepts for turning some aspects of this into downloadable things that you can click for money. But anyway, that's really downstream. That's the event horizon for this show. Good. I'm glad that it is. Now, to steer back here to your thing, asking me just about my thing with AI. The, you know, graphic creators are just so easy to use. I mean, you literally just go to a website, you know, whatever, like I'm not going to try and say the URL here, but, you know, for Bing AI or whichever one you want. And then literally, you know, just typing in your prompt of what you would like it represented as, in what manner, you can get increasingly detailed. But there comes a point when the basic functionality just, it'll just stop registering, you know, the last, you know, beyond a certain number of prompts within a prompt, it just becomes unhelpful. You know, just to tweak it, just to test it. And I do enjoy coming up with some of those, you know, visuals that go along with this, with the show notes and the PowerPoint thing that goes into the, you know, turning this into a video. I just think it's neat. Just like Marge Simpson, I just think they're neat, you know. It's in terms of, I mean, I could easily, I'm sure, get to a user interface where, like, okay, AI, give me music in whatever format. But that, to me, would not serve any enhanced purpose. I can just go to my usual sources. It doesn't give me any further capability. So I guess when I kind of think about it, broadly speaking, from an educational standpoint, it's just like any other, you know, technological thing or pedagogical approach. If you sort of recognize that it has certain capabilities, recognize that it has certain limitations, then you go, okay, so what can this help me do, rather than how do I be off this plagiarism tool, you know, with a stick, right? Which is kind of the reaction to a lot of people. It's like, you ever get a bat in your cottage or in your house and like the kind of, you know, with a broom and just, okay, you mother lover, just, you know, you're trying to be cool, you're trying to be rational. This is just kind of like, an AI is like a bat in the cottage in some cases. And it's just like, really, just settle down. It's really not, it's just, it's one more thing to use, right? Anyway, I'm really much more inclined to go on at length about the pedagogical stuff for H5P, because I think that there are certain, you know, overlaps. And I think where we're getting to the point now where AI outputting stuff is just so dumbed down, so basic, and so embedded in our normal culture anyway. I mean, I just feel like the shark probably has been jumped already. But, you know, still, you got to see it out. You got to make sure it's being done responsibly. And this picture, by the way, is not AI. It's actually a photograph. So,
right on.
Photograph.
So I'm going to jump into the four paradoxes.
Yes, please do.
Of rendering. Okay. So the four paradoxes, you kind of danced around them, which was pretty cool. One of them is that AI is a friend and yet a foe. It can, like, for students especially, like, for students, they can go in and, oh, yeah, I need help with both, but they're not learning. And do you want them to learn, or do you want them to just do well on the assessment, right? It's capable yet dependent. Oh, it's super helpful with this stuff, but based on the large language model access that they've got behind scenes, they just may not know something. Because I know that the original ChatGPT, they harvested everything from spring of 2021, and it just didn't know anything that happened after the spring of 2021. Some stuff has happened since then, and I know that they've updated it, and they have a gazillion servers out there and stuff. Accessible and yet restrictive is the also another component, another paradox, and it's popular even when it's banned. And last January, January 12th, we released an episode where we talked about people that are trying to just ban AI, and the floodgates are just too large. You just can't do it. A friend of mine talked to me. She was changing her course. She works in a university, and she said, okay, I have this assignment that I've done for a while now. Now I have to change it because I don't want to read what the AIs have said. because she has students that are producing results. And this person can barely string a sentence together. And suddenly, here's 500 words of perfect text. Kind it of on the subject.
And it is what my brain meant to say. It's like, it's almost like, you know, the centuries, thousands of years thing where it's like, you know, you have to have language as a mediating thing between thought and your external reality. That's just like, you know, it's just like, that thing that got you from being a goop of sea slime to having even a thing called the internet. It's like that whole thing you kind of developed up there. Just let's outsource that. You don't need that. Not cool. Boo Earns.
Boo Earns, that is about it. And Boo Earns leads me to one of the two images that I'm hoping that you put up into the WordPress site.
Oh, they because certainly are. Just done this whole... been there for some weeks, as a matter of fact, at this point. Yeah.
So because we're ripping off A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, one of the things that came across my feed is about how A Christmas Carol is a heartwarming tale of how the rich must be violently traumatized into sharing.
That's hilarious. And that's yesterday, an awesome, I think, that's an awesome quote.
And what happened yesterday? Jeff Bezos just announced that he was going to leave whatever, $180 billion to various charities when he dies. And the first comment that people had was, looks like somebody got visited by three ghosts last night. So it just made me laugh more than anything else.
I hope he's going to adjust for inflation because, I mean, he's still like only in his 60s, right?
I don't even know.
You want to make sure that's adjusted appropriately for inflation because otherwise it's kind of an empty gesture, Bill. Nice try, Bill. Matt Stranick can ruin anything. So anyway.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. The only other picture I really want to mention for the people, if you go to the website, there's this, it looks like one of those 1950s cartoons, and there's the little old lady talking to the children, and the children have like floating iPads and wacky visors and all that. And she starts with the waggy finger. When I was a kid, we only had 300 million websites, and we had to wait a whole second to watch a YouTube video. And that's how things have changed. I have a friend of mine whose aunt was big into ed tech well before I was. And one weekend, she just downloaded the entire internet.
I remember this particular thing yes. From last time. That's so rad. I mean, can you tell us just more about that, or is that kind of it? I mean,
that was basically the fact that, and it wasn't even like, I think it was a floppy. It might have been a floppy disk, not even one of those non-floppy floppies. The save icon on the computer these days, that one. I don't think it was that one. I think it was before that one.
Like the black one. But it was still the internet, like before rectangular, like squares, like
Yes. And if you've ever seen the movie War Games, not the 9.5-inch ones, the 5.25-inch ones, because there was different sizes of those. Hey, we're the Ed Nontech. I'm old enough to have some history, so I'm gonna share that history.
Here's a thought. riddle me this, Professor. Would this show be any different in scope or focus if I just kind of arbitrarily went hee 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 instead of Ed Nontech, Ed Untech? What about, would that be Nontech or Untech? Would that be like just the same thing with a different hat, or would it be a completely different thing?
We wouldn't have the same logo.
There we go.
Our logo is an end.
We're going to stop those malicious time travelers in their tracks. You know, there's We've solved the reason for this. We don't need to go down this any further. It's just sort of like, would it have been as catchy? Would it have been? I just alternate realities, man. Alternate realities and such. Since we're dissembling towards the end of the episode. Cool. Yes, so there's some other very cool visuals there too. Thank you as ever for bringing those in. I think they're an absolutely charming aspect of our show notes and such. Why don't we get into the word and question and phrase of the podcast, not necessarily in that order.
So the word of the podcast is future, because what we've done is we've looked forward to the future, and we said future many, many times in the episode, and that's where we need to head. The question of the podcast is, how can educators prepare for the future state of EdTech in professional practice? Because right now, is there a real plan, or are still people still recovering from the pandemic, or are they having a chance to catch their breath and move forward with how they're doing education today? Now, the phrase of the podcast is going to be a cheat, because the phrase of the podcast I always take from when we record. And in the previous one, the one that StreamYard hated.
I'm hoping it's the same one. I'm phrase of the podcast.
It was Ragnarok FTW. And that, I just loved that so much. And I didn't want to just say it to say it so I could throw it in as a phrase. So I was like, I'm just going to refer back to the episode that nobody ever gets to hear. But that's where I've got. That's what I've got for.
And it still exists in the intercloud. I'm going to stop calling it the internet. I'm just going to be like, just casually like, oh yeah, so I did my intercloud banking, and I'm going to start correcting people when they say, you mean internet banking? No, I mean internet cloud. It's like this whole new thing. The internet is over. The intercloud starts now. That's the future. That's my future prediction. One of them. And for more, please visit the show notes. This has been cool, Doug. I think the technology is actually cooperating with us a bit more. Is there anything else we want to kind of add here before we go out and then potentially record another in quick succession, as it were?
Other than, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
We certainly shall. Thanks as ever. Take care. Bye for now, everybody. Happy holidays and such, too, while we're at it.